to the Movies You Love podcast, a podcast where I generally sit down every week, or we'll talk about that in a minute, or every so often, to talk to a film lover out there in the internet, because it is of my belief we don't have that many in Jamaica. I guess I should find some. Actually, I'm lying. I know a few out here, and I'm considering it. I'm thinking of it for the future. So if you guys, locals, Jamaican locals, love movies, listen to this podcast, and are interested in participating, just tweet me. Or there are a couple in my mind which I already know that I want to invite. And if you feel like you wanna have that feeling of being like all inclusive and being like all like Andrew wants me on his show, then you can just not ask and make it weird and wait for me to ask you, and we'll see how few I find. Anyways, let's not go by that. And on this episode, I have a very special guest, but before we get to him, I kind of want to talk to you guys. I want to talk to you guys about this show, because for anyone who hasn't noticed, because you guys haven't complained to me, right? I thought there'd be some complaints, but sadly there weren't. There has not been a show upload for this episode, and I'm looking on my phone, since March 16th. It is currently May 24th, and I'm recording this intro, which is a full 2 months hiatus on this podcast. And to tell you the truth, it is entirely my fault. I've had this episode I'm about to play for you guys for 2 months, and I have to apologize to my guests, as I apologize frequently to my guests. But luckily for me, they don't seem to harangue me with, like, Andrew, where did my episode go? And I don't know whether I should be sad or okay with that, but I'm gonna go ahead and be okay. But anyways, talking about this hiatus, for those of you who follow me very closely on Twitter, and I'm guessing anyone who listens to this, you are one of those people, I have been having some issues for the last few months, and I was unemployed for a period in totally 8 months, from the beginning of September last year to a week ago. I started a new job, and within that period of time, I took a lot of time to myself, being back home for the first time in 2 years, because for those of you who know, I was in Trinidad working. I moved back to Jamaica, and I almost don't want to use this word because it feels kind of horrible to say about my family, but they can be distracting as it comes to being productive with doing this internet creation that I do. As you look on the website now, I haven't done much writing in that period of time. I've gone on and off, on and off. And the truth of the matter is, I don't really know what I want to do anymore. I enjoy doing these podcasts. I still am doing Tump Weekly, even though on the odd occasion I slack off with the release of those episodes. And I hope my listeners over at that show aren't giving too much issues with that, because we're still releasing content and it's still pretty good, I feel. If not, tell me so that I can fix it. And on this show, I just didn't feel like editing this episode. I enjoyed this conversation when I had it 2 months ago with Kyle, and you'll hear him talk effusively about the great film from the early 2000s, I don't have the year in front of me right now, Stranger Than Fiction. But I just kind of felt in this mode of just wanting to detach a little bit from the internet. I even haven't been tweeting as often as I was while I was in Trinidad and at the top of my game of producing content for the internet. And the truth of the matter is, for the most part, I didn't ever really think that content was amazing. And I'm not saying that I really felt that I was going to become this great online film writer who would move on to greater things and be hired and writing professionally, even though that is kind of a thing I would have loved to do, I would have loved to have done, even knowing how in this current landscape, hearing about a lot of film critics out there who are doing 6 and 7 outlets in order to have enough money to survive living in some of the bigger cities over, where being a film journalist is actually an accessible career. Because for me, living in the Caribbean, it's not a very accessible career. I have shitty theater, and I don't get those movies that are really the best movies to be a part of the conversation over. I mean, it's something we talk about a lot on Twitter. I talk about a lot on Twitter, especially with my brother and my co-host Douglas and Damien. on Twitter or the other podcast, Tump, if you hear some weird noise, it's that I'm rubbing my nose while I'm doing all this talking. I don't know why. Turned off my fan. It's all hot in here. But I just felt like talking to you guys and kind of asking you guys what it is you want from this show, because I want to start it back up again. I'm going to start fielding people for guest appearances. I know I have a couple in my mind which I want to get on. If there's anyone out there listening to this who hasn't been on the show and wants to come on and talk, I'm being honest here, guys. Email me, andrew.robinson@gmanreviews.com, or tweet me at @gmanreviews and say, Andrew, I want to participate in this podcasting venture. And I'm so happy to bring you on. I'm still trying to work out my logistics of if I want to bring on a recurring guest, as to what I would how I would change this conversation for them. Because if I already had the conversation with you, well, maybe we could just talk about another movie and just have fun talking about that and finding another time in their life when a movie affected them really closely. So I hope that this whole intro hasn't bored you to tears. And I hope that you can understand what I was doing. I almost felt like it would be okay if I came on here, did this intro, pretended like nothing ever happened, and then probably just tagged on, welcome to season 2, pretending that I had planned this as like an episodic adventure through the world of film discussion. Maybe I should do that. I don't know. I'm considering adding a couple new segments just to see how it works out. But I'm pretty sure that won't happen for at least a couple more episodes. I'll still be doing the old format, the old discussion format, and seeing how it goes. But anyways, I hope you can understand as to what I'm going through and how I feel about all of this. I still very much enjoy having these conversations with my guests and with all of you who talk to me about the show on the internet. I still enjoy creating content. It's just, I think the content I'm creating might change over the next few months, because I'm actually considering doing a lot more podcasting content as opposed to written content. I guess it feels a lot easier to me, even though the editing process is really hard for me. But in the end of the day, I enjoy it, and I hope you guys do too. And again, I think this might be the third time I'm saying this intro, feel free to critique me directly. Talk to me, email me, Twitter me. Say, Andrew, stop doing this show, which is horrible, the internet hates you. Or say, Andrew, we love you and we like what you're doing with the show. Maybe you can try this new thing and see how it works out. I'm open to ideas. Anyways, back to this episode that you're about to listen to, because I've already jabbered on for over 6-7 minutes. This guest is an individual by the name of Kyle Turner, who, if you're like me, likes the idea that his Twitter handle is @TileTurner, and if I knew him personally and I was in the same city as him, I would refuse to call him anything but Tile. And I hope anyone listening to this who does know him personally and lives in the city with him and sees him on a day-to-day basis, never stop calling him Tile, because that is amazing. You can read a lot of the content over at moviescene.wordpress.com, as well as the Very Aware blog, The Black Mariah, and moviemezzanine.com, where he writes a lot of things, but more specifically, he has a column which he writes about music within movies, and it's kind of fantastic. Anyways, as I said, we're going to be talking about Stranger Than Fiction this week, so enjoy, and there we go.
I'm the assistant your publishers hired.
The publishers think I have writer's block.
Do you have writer's block?
I don't know how to kill Harold Crick.
This is a story about a man named Harold Crick. Harold lived a life of solitude. He would walk home alone. He would eat alone. When others' minds would fantasize about their upcoming day...
Hello?
Harold just counted brush strokes.
All right, who just said Harold just counted brush strokes?
Dave, I'm being followed.
How are you being followed? You're not moving.
It's by a woman's voice.
So, Kyle, you are going to be a first here on this podcast. You're going to be, I believe, the first person to have to take his second choice on this podcast. Because while the show has been going for a little over a year now, I find it interesting that I haven't yet gotten anyone on here who goes, damn it, my movie is taken. and you get to be that first. Are you proud of that, Kyle?
I'm very proud. I'm very proud to that you asked me. I'm very honored, and I'm proud to be a first in that manner. But I'm actually glad that the movie was covered, because I'm not sure what I would say about it, but I'm glad that other people share my love for bringing up Baby.
Mm-hmm. But the film that you ended up coming with to talk about today is a 2006 film, Stranger Than Fiction, which I remember vaguely at the time. It was just before I started blogging about movies. And it was one of those movies which kind of struck me as interestingly weird. Like, it was one of those firsts for me. But I'm kind of curious, mm-hmm. for you, in 2006, I'd assume this would have been a theatrical view for you when you saw it for the first time in the theater. Was that true?
No, I think I saw it from Netflix. Netflix or some video store. I did not get to see it in theaters. I know that I had seen the trailer and I wanted to, but at that point, I wasn't so bent on seeing movies in the theater, even though I did go fairly often. But I ended up seeing that on DVD.
Tell me about your experience that first time seeing this film.
This was the film, I guess the best way I can describe it, this is the film that made me want to write about film. I feel like there's so much going on in it, in terms of its narrative structure, in terms of the way that it's able to key on certain characters and emotions, specifically emotions, I think, that it just made me want to be able to articulate how I felt while watching the film and what worked and what didn't. For me, it definitely primarily works, but this is the one that made me want to put it down in words in some form.
So, as I already mentioned, your initial response was a film that's taken, Bringing Up Baby. I'm kind of curious, was this film pre or post Bringing Up Baby?
This was definitely post. Bringing Up Baby was one of the first films I ever saw. I credit Bringing Up Baby as the first film I remember seeing, but Stranger Than Fiction is the first one I remember seeing and wanting to do something about it.
Was there something specifically about this film that kind of harkened back to your emotions with Bringing Up Baby?
Not exclusively, I guess, because Stranger Than Fiction is a little bit more melancholic, and I, at that point in my life, I think it was 2006, I think I was 13 or something, and as much as I loved movies, I wasn't that familiar with films that made me feel a large range of emotions that was able to cover some sort of spectrum, because Bringing Up Baby is a screwball comedy, and this one is more of a dramedy that really it has some very funny moments, but at its heart, it's very contemplative and sometimes really quite sad.
I was actually thinking about that idea of comedy, because this being a movie starring one of the big comedy stars right now, Will Ferrell, who is known for being ridiculous and outlandish, I was thinking very much about the idea of comedy and about mm-hmm. things like understanding that one of the many features of comedy in movies or any form of storytelling is characters who reside within absurd worlds but refuse to accept them as absurd. They think of it as normal. Mm-hmm. While Stranger Than Fiction, you see a character who's very normal and recognizes something absurd about his world and refuses to accept it as being normal. He sees it as being crazy and does something about it. I'm very curious as to the storytelling devices, especially the narration, which is one of the big features of this film, how something like that possibly latched on with you in this movie.
I really liked the way you put it. I liked the absurdity of it, that there was some sort of self-awareness, especially with Will Ferrell's character, Harold Crick. I liked that character was forced to question the world he lived in and was forced to question his reality. Because, again, I was kind of just getting into the mix of watching a little bit more, becoming more serious with my film watching. And this was one of the first ones where a character was faced this kind of, existential crisis, where he had to recognize that the world that he was in was not quite right. I always found that very interesting. One of the things that I don't like, I was reading reviews of it like shortly thereafter, and I noticed that a lot of things that were thrown at it was that it was like Charlie Kaufman light. And that was, I always thought that was really stupid, because yes, Charlie Kaufman makes these absurd comedies, but they don't, I don't think that they're certainly brilliant, but I think Stranger Than Fiction is in its own right very well crafted in how it positions its character and his version of reality and his ability to channel his world. And I don't think everyone needs to be Charlie Kaufman either.
No, definitely not. I'm happy with Charlie Kaufman being Charlie Kaufman and everyone else being everyone else. But oddly enough, when I was rewatching this film, like over the last couple of days, I was thinking to myself of two separate movies that I feel would work really well in tandem with this film. And it was the most recent, the film from, was it last year or the year before? Ruby Sparks, which has the obvious writer character connection. But I was also thinking of a Charlie Kaufman film, Synecdoche, in New York, which deals with this idea of recognizing the futility of your control over the world. While at the same time, this movie talks about attempting to take control over that thing which we think we have no control over. I'm very curious as to what you think about movies like that, like Ruby Sparks and like Synecdoche, New York, where they play with those ideas that this movie feels very tame in dealing with, but at the same time leaves them there for us to kind of contemplate if we're willing to go there with it.
I love those sorts of movies. I love those films that are, you play with self-awareness and made a reality and give you the option of thinking, but also have some cursory surface level enjoyment. And I like having that option. I actually think Synecdoche, New York is a little aggressive with its, intellectualism, but I still like it by all means. I'm very much drawn to layers within film and the ability to peel away at each one. That's always been one of the reasons why I want to write about film, to peel away at those layers.
Layers is something that this movie doesn't lack, and I'm kind of curious about, I think it's around 15 or 20 minutes into this movie, even though we've heard the narration at that point, we assumed for some reason, while our character, Crick, played by Will Ferrell, is aware of his narrator and the fact that he's in a story, we had reached a point in the film where we thought that was enough. That was as far as this movie was going to take us into world building. But it does something interesting, which introduces us to the actual author itself. And I'm curious, in that moment, like, what is it for you that this movie kind of handles when it comes to talking about writers, being someone who wants to write about film at this point in time in your life, and writing about ideas? What does this film deal with the idea of writers for you?
I used to want to be a fiction writer for a while, but then I realized I wasn't good at it. But that frustration that writers often feel when they're trying to do something but just can't. Writer's block, yeah. Because Emma Thompson's character, Kay Eiffel, she has writer's block. And it was a very appealing portrayal of writer's block, because to me, it wasn't that over the top. I guess you could make an argument that it was, but for me, it seemed like she was neurotic, but in a fairly realistic and relatable way. Like, I actually did an essay for one of my classes about Charlie Kaufman's characters and the cult of genius and yada, yada, yada. But there's this romanticized idea of what a writer is and the frustrations that they go through and that they must be an alcoholic or something. And although Kay has her quirks, specifically she smokes cigarettes and then spits into a tissue and then, like, puts it out, it doesn't seem like it's, I guess, fetishizing that idea. She seems like a writer. And Emma Thompson, like, does write. She won the Oscar for Sense and Sensibility. But I liked that she was able to play with those ideas in terms of fiddling with how she was going to kill Harold Crick. And I like that she has her reality and Harold has his. And they're anonymous enough that they can intersect realistically. And within her reality, she goes off into her kind of own fantasy in how she would kill Harold Crick. I just really liked how the film played with those different universes, I guess, those different worlds.
I found it really interesting watching this movie this time around, and I'm not quite sure if it kind of hit me when I saw this in 2006, but the idea that this movie dealt with where in movies, and I guess, why am I saying I guess, like I don't know this as a fact, yes, in books as well, when we are dealing with stories, we edit those stories down for what we like to consider the more important parts, and we can see things within here, like when we assume the moments in which we actually hear the narration that are moments that are happening in the book, but there are many moments where Harold Crick isn't being narrated and he's just going about his life. And when we get this moment of realizing that while this is a world that's somewhat created by this author, it also exists on its own and has its own reality. Mm-hmm. And it's not just that moment of them meeting, because that eventually happens and that becomes its own craziness that occurs. But I wonder the thought of making worlds in fiction reality, because that's the goal that all writers do, attempting to make a fiction mm-hmm. feel real, so real that you're immersed into it, that even when we have these edits, we don't mind that we skipped 3 days in the future just to find out what happened. We're invested, we believe in it. What was this movie for you when it came to talking about those things, about realities within fictions, as opposed to everything else, which is just kind of not even asking you to talk about those things?
Gosh, let me process that for a second. I think most good stories make you want to be part of that world, and they have an immersive quality. And Stranger Than Fiction is the world that it exists in is kind of anonymous enough that it can pretty much take place in any metropolitan area. So it's not that hard to be there. And after seeing this film, I kind of wanted a narrator of my own, which I thought would be cool. But I really, really was invested in being in that kind of world, in that reality, for Harold at least. And we were talking earlier about the different worlds between Harold's and Kay's. I think the reality that Mark Forrester and Zach Helm create, that in terms of Kay's world, is also very intriguing. I would love to have a studio apartment and be able to write at ease. I just think it's very interesting to be part of that world. I'm rambling. I apologize.
No, that is perfectly fine. You mentioned the fact that at one point in time, you were interested in writing fiction yourself. While you are still a writer, and can I say a very good one, at this time and point in time, I'm kind of curious, as it comes to when you were considering being a fiction writer, what was it that drew you to the idea of reveling in the world of fiction as opposed to something more real?
Most of the fiction stories that I wanted to write took place within an identifiable reality or an identifiable world. But I wanted to be able to tell stories about people and their experiences. And when I would try to do that, I'd get lost in these very minute details, and I would like spend a couple pages on routines and like the description of a kitchen, and then I ended up not being able to tell an actual story. It was more like a description of someone's world. It was more like some sort of outline or something like that. And I realized I take more enjoyment from looking at those worlds and then kind of deconstructing them and trying to look at as many facets as I can and trying to understand how they work and why they work.
Being someone who enjoys, as you just said, understanding the mechanics of a world, when Stranger Than Fiction plays on a lot of story mechanics, do you kind of lose yourself in what it does there?
Oh, absolutely. It makes me want to be a better fiction writer, but I very much enjoy the way that it plays with comedy and tragedy, especially in those mechanics of playing with those conventions. The narrative structure of the film in its relation to comedy and tragedy, there's that one line where Dustin Hoffman, as the professor, talks about the difference between them, that it's about the continuity of life or the inevitability of death. And it's like the film is playing a game with you and walking this very, very thin rope, and you're wondering where it's going to finally fall on. I think those mechanics are very interesting.
Thinking about story mechanics within this world, I was questioning something about the end and that idea of Emma Thompson saving Crick, basically saying it's not just about her deciding not to murder someone who she believes is real, but it almost feels like this moment in movie making where the story itself is afraid to go to tragedy itself. It feels almost like that movie that refused to show us the death we deserved, talking about how it's so ironic and so important poetically that we have this tragedy exist. And her kind of going, I'm okay with it being lesser because we ended up in a more romantic, comedic kind of ending than with what we got. Do you kind of start questioning stories and these kind of general mechanics when you get to the ending as to what they can do?
I do, and sometimes, not with this film, other films I do sometimes feel that they are a cop-out in terms of the ending, but I honestly feel that the film works on so many metafictional levels that the film ends up being what Kay wrote, that this is the adaptation of what she wrote, which sounds very strange because it's working on so many levels. There's the world that Harold lives in, and then there's the world that Kay lives in, which she's narrating Harold's, and then this film ends up being the final product because she says at the end that she's going to go back and essentially rewrite the book, which I think ends up being the film. And go on.
It's this weird thing where when I'm watching this, and it becomes something kind of odd with how I can consume films in a very literal tone sometimes, that I find it very interesting that within the world, Emma Thompson is writing this book, and for lack of a better way of putting it, it's obviously going to be her first draft of the book, right? No one writes immediately and goes, this is the book, don't talk to me ever again. I don't know. Does anyone? Probably.
Probably.
There's probably that guy out there selling 5 million copies and just goes like, yeah, I thought that out in a weekend. But the idea that her magical typewriter is final, but what I kept asking myself, what would happen if she were to rewrite the book as she's just saying she's going to do? Does that retroactively change Harold Crick's life? It's just a weird thing in my head that goes, this world, I like science fiction with that seems weird.
There are certain things that I, for some reason, don't bother questioning, and I never questioned the logistics of why exactly this was happening to Harold, whether it was the typewriter or whether it was Kay. For some reason, that didn't really occur to me, and if it didn't, I guess it just slipped out of my mind, but I feel like if she did go back and edit it, that the film ends up being the thing that she ended up writing, that just ends up being this weird nesting egg, I guess, of all these different worlds that fit into one another and are commenting on the other. Do you wish that there were an explanation for why this is happening to Harold?
Oh, none whatsoever. I'm happy with the tone that the film takes, which is us just accepting that these realities exist and happen to coexist, actually. And it becomes a weird kind of interesting thing when we get that confrontation that they actually meet and he goes, please don't kill me. it's a fun thing that I enjoy and I love in the movie. Like it's one of those movies where I like to call it the everybody movie. It's a movie where if you show it to people who don't like to go to that meta, structural, trope level of movie discussion or literary discussion, they will enjoy this movie as a really cool romantic comedy that happens to have some quirky characters. And they'll say, oh my God, Will Ferrell isn't offensively funny in every scene like he normally is. And if you go to the people like us who want to have these conversations, you get to have those conversations. And I appreciate movies that do that. I find myself more and more attempting to value these movies more than I value the 2001 A Space Odyssey films, where there is actually no way the casual viewer is going to find a way to access that movie and enjoy it properly.
This one sits very comfortably in the mind that it provides you with a lot of options to approach it. And I think that's really nice. I don't, it's not forceful with its ideas. It's just very pleasant.
Yeah, in the way that it presents it. Happy.
Yes.
I'm very curious because it's something that struck me while watching this movie, mainly because of the idea of there being the book story and the narration over it, and then there's the film over that narration. I'm kind of curious as to whether you've ever considered the idea of what this story would look like if you were reading it in a book.
The film or the story within the film?
No, the actual film we're seeing, if it was actually, instead of a movie, being a book. Like, have you ever wondered what that book would feel like reading as opposed to watching?
I think I would read it because Harold Crick is an interesting enough character that I would be very much invested in seeing what happens to him. That's why I think the film does very successfully. But I think it would be a little hard to illustrate it unless the writer were very, very talented. And I think Zach Helm is talented enough that hypothetically, if he had made this into a novel instead of a film, that I would be compelled to read it. The story within the film, I wish were a novel. Death and Taxes, I wish were a novel, because I think that the narration is so compelling and so articulate. It is wildly articulate. I ended up buying the screenplay a while back, and I read it, and it does follow very closely to the film, or vice versa, but the screenplay itself is very articulate, and I would really love if he did start writing novels. I think that would be really interesting. But as a novel, I think it would be compelling enough for me to read. I don't know if I would love it as much because film is just so awesome, and I, for some reason, stopped reading for pleasure in high school. Yeah.
There'd be too much words in those book things.
Yeah, too many words. What are words?
I always love that moment when you throw out something to the internet and someone clicks on it and replies, too long, didn't read. Too, I'm like, okay.
Yep. I try to read most. I have a Kindle, actually, and normally I'm very much for actual paper and reading actual books, but because I read so many essays on the internet, there's an extension for Google Chrome called Send to Kindle, and it just delivers the text of a blog post or a website post to your Kindle, and then I just plow through like 12 of those a day. So it's very easy.
I find it really weird that while I read so much things on the internet, eventually when I get to reading a book, because I was never a big book person as a child, that I always want to read like a physical book. Like I'm that guy who will read two novels a year tops. I've never been a big reader as such, but I will sit down and read through 13 articles on the internet that I find that look interesting. And a couple of them will be those 4,000-word behemoth things that people will go, Andrew, why did you waste the time? Just tell me what it's about. Like, it's awesome. Go read.
I used to be a really big reader, and then in high school when I was being forced to read these things that I guess I enjoyed, I just didn't have enough time because I actually was in the IB, the International Baccalaureate program, and I didn't have time to read for pleasure except for these like 2-page internet articles. So, and then I tried getting back into the mix by getting a Kindle, and that sort of helped, but not really. Not with fiction. I fall asleep through fiction for some reason now. I just read nonfiction now.
But if Emma Thompson was narrating you reading it, you'd read the shit out of that.
I would read the shit out of it.
One thing that I remember, like, very, very interestingly about myself in this movie was one thing that I love was that around this time, and this movie kind of solidified it for me, was a time where I fell in love with Spoon, the band. I'm kind of curious to ask you, especially as someone who's starting up this series of articles over on Movie Mezzanine talking about music and film, was there something with you and the music in this film?
I didn't recognize that it was Spoon back in 2006. I didn't have an appreciation for the score at that point. And it wasn't until the year before last year, when I was rewatching the film for was probably the 1,000th time, that I made sure to pay attention to the music, because I read the script and it had a different set of songs that Zach Helm wanted to use, and I looked those up, and then I looked up the soundtrack for Stranger Than Fiction, and then I fell in love with Spoon, and I have the soundtrack on my iPod, and I also have Spoon's album Gimme Fiction.
Oh, that's a great album.
Which has I Turn My Camera On. And I've ended up using I Turn My Camera On for a couple of short films I did for school. And there's something very interesting about their music that I can't pin down. I like I Turn My Camera On because it seems strangely obsessive. It has this very particular beat and rhythm to it that sounds like a stalker, I guess. And the way that I'm describing it shouldn't fit with Stranger Than Fiction, but Harold is neurotic enough and OCD enough that the obsessive part of that song, that it's so meticulous with how many beats there are in, per section, or I don't know my music very well. Which is slightly ironic that I'm writing about music for Movie Mezzanine. I think that works for the film very well. And I actually have That's Entertainment as something that I want to do, I want to write about in the future for the column.
Mm.
This is not Spoon, but it's used in the film.
Yeah, the music of this film is quite good. I do enjoy the soundtrack as I watch the movie a lot. But I'm kind of curious. This being one of those movies that, as we mentioned, kind of hits in that middle spot of people's accessibility to it, I'm kind of curious as to how, if at all, you have seen people as you attempt to share this movie with people around you.
I keep trying to tell people about this movie and keep trying to share this film. When they hear Will Ferrell is in it, they automatically tell me that they're not going to watch it.
Oh,
and
wow.
That kind of annoys me. I never have been a huge Will Ferrell fan. I appreciate him as much as the next person. But I guess the people that I meet have this strange aversion to his sense of humor. But I keep telling them that Will Ferrell is a pretty incredible dramatic actor, that he's very focused in becoming that character. He's also really good in a film called Everything Must Go, and I like when he plays against type, I guess, where he kind of has to play it straight, and I guess it shows his talent as an actor and a comedian that he's able to put specific focus on how he brings humor to the role, because the humor that Harold Crick does is deadpan and kind of casual in a very different way to Will Ferrell's general manic. Tina Fey described him as impressionistic style of humor.
Yeah, he's not exactly being a Ron Burgundy in this movie.
Yeah.
I actually find it very interesting because I kind of assumed that Will Ferrell was more of a popular guy in the world. I was thinking very much about the idea of the assistant, Queen Latifah, who is attempting to push Emma Thompson into completing this book. Being someone who, as we've already mentioned multiple times, wanted to write fiction, being someone who writes so much now, do you find that idea of someone pushing someone to be inventive in writing to be something that can actually work?
I don't know from experience. I would like to test that out at some point, hire someone to bug me about writing, because I'm actually sometimes really lazy and I'll just want to play on the internet instead of actually write. I'll just stay on Twitter for 5 hours when I could be writing. I imagine that it has its pros and cons, because what we see in the film from Queen Latifah, she has like these different techniques in trying to get Kay to write. She has like different word lists or comment cards of ideas of how Kay can do these writing exercises, and I've never actually read a writer's block book, but I think it would be interesting to actually have someone there to motivate you to be creative, because I think to some extent us creative types are really good at procrastinating and would be very comfortable just sitting there and waiting for inspiration to come to us, when realistically that's not a viable option when you actually have to push yourself. Then I guess sometimes you need someone else to be there to push you. So I think the con of it would be that if someone's constantly pushing you to do it, you might run out of steam and be producing less than worthy work. That you'd be producing this kind of material that you're not totally proud of, because someone's just constantly pushing you and you feel obligated to please them or to meet that quota. When I did try writing fiction, I tried writing like 2,000 words a day of this novella that I tried writing, and it worked for like a week, and I had 20 pages or something, but one could definitely tell that as time went on, because I was pushing myself every day to meet a specific quota instead of writing what actually came to me and was actually tolerable to read, that it ended up being kind of a mess and not very pleasant. I burned it. I burned it.
Which is what people should do with all of their first scripts. More than
likely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I haven't read a good first script ever.
I tried writing a script once, and it ended up being everything I hate about contemporary romantic comedies.
Was there a scene of a man running in the rain?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
Burn it. Is there anything else you want to share that I haven't quite touched on?
I was kind of wondering if you felt that Anna Paschal, Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, which we haven't talked about actually, if you considered her a manic pixie dream girl.
I'm not quite sure, because I guess she does kind of fit the criteria of being someone within the film who seems for the most part to exist only to motivate the guy to be something else. Mm-hmm. Which is, I believe, the relative definition of Manic Pixie Dream Girl. Except for those people who believe that under the dictionary it really just says Zooey Deschanel. but I almost want to not call her that, because I felt this time around watching the movie that she was so much less to the plot of the film. than everything else. Or maybe it was just an element of the movie which I decided wasn't as unique than the rest of it that felt so special. I can't tell right now.
I would agree with that.
Huh?
I would agree with that. I think I've watched it 2 times in the last month and a half, and I've thought about that question both times, and I hate to admit it, but I think she is a manic pixie dream girl, and she really only exists, as you said, to change Harold's life. And that makes me sad, because I feel like that is such a crutch for writers, especially male writers, it ends up being for this kind of movie, to create that kind of character, which serves very little purpose beyond that. But I want her to be something more, because I think Maggie Gyllenhaal is very charming in the role, and I really love when she tells Harold to get bent, because I had never heard that phrase before, and I had to Google it.
Oh, man. I like when she starts shouting Taxman randomly.
Yes. Taxman. I wish she existed or had a larger role within the film, or had her own motivations. I mean, besides her being kind of an anarchist or some sort of socialist, I really wish that she had, like, her own subplot of something that she wants to do, and alas, she does not. But that scene where she gives Harold cookies, where he says, I think I'm in a tragedy, that is the scene that I adore, and I guess is the single scene that I love the most out of maybe all of cinema.
That's good. Taxman. Taxman works. I think it might be because of my love for the Beatles song, The Taxman.
Yeah, I love that song. I tried the comedy and tragedy test once when I was in high school and I had a crush on this girl, and it did not go well. It was like several pages tragedy.
Did you find yourself a few years back watching Submarine on repeat?
Submarine, the Richard Ayoade film?
Yeah.
I watched it probably twice, but I didn't watch it on repeat. Oh. But I did definitely identify with the main character, but I wanted to think that I was less of a dillweed.
Anyways, I want to thank you so much for coming and talking with me, Kyle.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And I'd like to congratulate myself on going this whole conversation without accidentally calling you Tile.
Ah, I people have called me Tyler before, and I always think that they're drunk, but yes, thank you for not calling me Tyle.
Because I've read that Twitter name so often going Tyle Kerner. Like, that should be a real name, right?
I will name my firstborn that.
So that was the show. So, as always, you can hear the show when I'm releasing episodes, and let's hope that for the foreseeable future it will be on a running schedule of what should be every other weekend. You can listen to the show over at the website gmanreviews.com or through iTunes, where, guys, go and rate and review the show. It would be such a help. It would be so good to see all of those there. I think the last time I checked, there was one review and a few ratings. Go and hit that up with some more information. I love to hear your positive and negative feedback if you have it. If you feel so entitled to go and do it, I enjoy reading it. You can also hear us over at Stitcher Radio if that's your preferred application. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at gmanreviews. And also Kyle Turner, the guest, you can follow him over at Tyle Kerner. Once again, thank you so much and have a wonderful day.